right here every Saturday morning to put a skip in your step, a sparkle in your eye, a smile on your face. In the garden at Rosie on the House. Give us a ring. We still have an open line at 1-888-767-4348. Let us know what your landscaping question, dilemma, problem, or challenge is, and we'll get her taken care of.
Start this segment off with Sean Santan Valley. Going
hi, Sean.
Subterranean here.
Hey, how's it going? I just bought a house back in October, and when I moved in, he had there's a few plants, a tree out front,
right.
And they had a remote monitor or a timer on the side of the house that didn't work. So right. What was nice of the owner previous to us is he bought a brand new Rainbird system and
very
left
good.
It inside the house. So I went ahead and installed that. Plugged it in, and I sort of got it to work,
okay.
Except for it seems like it just drips for 10 minutes and then stops until the next day. So I don't know exactly what I'm doing wrong or if there's something else to do. But in the backyard, we just planted, a palm tree, a lemon tree, a pomegranate tree, and we're going to put a couple more things back there. But I wanted to run a line back, and I have a box in the garage that was also left behind full of like sprinkler nozzles and different kinds
bits and pieces
and just parts. And I don't have a clue what to do with any of it. So more of not really a technical question, but I was wondering who would be in the East Valley, Far East Valley that I could contact to maybe.
Sure.
Come help.
Well, we could help, of course.
Okay.
But in lieu, if you want to try and do it yourself, I've got some friends up there a little further north than you out in the Mesa area. It's Sprinkler World, good friends of ours there on Country Club Drive. You can look them up online. But that'd be a good place to go for some advice, maybe a little design help, a little material direction.
Bring the bin of parts and say, what
do I do with these? Right.
I don't get his first dilemma, a drip system that comes on for 10 minutes and then
sound like we have the irrigation timer set correctly. And we need to verify several things first. We need to run the system manually to see if it's working correctly. And then verify that the timer has control over the system. And then from there, we would program it correctly. And depends on the unit. So,
as somebody that deals with these every day.
Oh, yeah.
No sweat. I tell you what, when I transition from winter to summer, I mean, I have to sit there with the control timer to make sure they fire. Because ultimately, if I don't pay attention and make sure, all of a sudden I realize it's not turning on right. It's not the correct time. Or I've still got all this rye type watering going on for the summer that's just not. And by the time I get it figured out, and it takes me, the afternoon. 6 months later, when I'm transitioning, I forgot it all.
Well, I don't have any excuse. I'm supposed to know how to program these things. When I was a young man, I actually made one of the irrigation timers into an alarm clock to wake me up. It was neat because I had different programs, so it could wake me up at a different time during the week for work versus the weekends.
I think someone like me should design those. It'd be a little bit more intuitive so that you could just switch from, what are your primary watering seasons? Can I just switch it? Have a guy like you come and program a stupid thing, and then all me, the homeowner, has to do is spring, summer, fall, or winter.
They have those. It's called a smart clock.
Well, I need a smart clock.
Yeah, that you get it set up correctly. Tell it all about the site conditions, and it has a little solar radiation sensor, moisture sensor, a temperature sensor, and a little ET rate built into it. And it makes decisions after you've programmed it correctly and told it what it's watering. It then basically takes over.
And we can mount that to existing systems.
Yes, it's very retrofittable.
And for 6 to 9 station clock, you're looking at what kind of money installed.
They're not inexpensive because there's some installation costs with the sensor. And so it's a very site-specific thing, but I would budget, this is really from the hip about $600.
Yeah, it's worth it.
Yeah.
All day long.
Thinking through the time spent on that would have already paid for itself
two or
three times.
And water usage.
And Saturday
healthy
afternoons.
Yeah. Right. Using water efficiently.
I'll give you one more little piece of advice here, Sean. When you say you're going to run a drip line, when you get that trench open, put 4 or 5 drip lines in there. Put some electric low voltage in there. Whether you end up using it or not, the last thing you want to do is be ripping it out when you realize that you can't put your palm tree with your pomegranate, with your shrub, that they're all going to get there. Planting and growing and landscaping is a very addictive. You just get so emotionally attached and you want to grow. Put a few pipes in there.
Now, on that topic, if he's running a drip line out to a new tree and he's going to put the little spaghetti feeders, right, you know, in a 24-inch diameter around the root ball,
right,
there's a time where he has to go in there and stretch those out. Mm-hmm. How far can you keep stretching? How many emitters can I put on that one tree?
You are limited ultimately by how many emitters you can put on the line by the laws of hydraulics, of course.
Right.
But practically, there's not a whole lot of limitations in most situations.
Okay.
And the emitter should be installed to the drip line of the plant. Unless it's brand new, you want to water the root ball, of course, initially.
Yeah.
Once it gets established, water the drip line, and then you do want to move the emitters out, increase the time, and even add emitters as the tree matures.
Do you leave one in by the root ball, or you just keep spreading it out?
I will start, in some cases, we'll actually do 2 rings. We'll do one that's not next to the trunk, but out near the drip line, and then one a little further.
Okay. All right.
You're talking about laws of hydraulic pressure and everything. On the valve, it usually says that when you're going to a drip line, it's a regular valve, but then you get another part that regulates
the...
It's like 8 pressure. Gallons per minute or whatever.
Yes.
So then you've got...
You saw that 1/10 to 8th. That's the low flow regulator, right? Right.
You would never want to max that out, though.
It's the polyethylene drip line. Your 0.710 size polyethylene drip line has a limitation of about 3.5 to 4 gallons of water per minute, which works out to 240 gallons an hour. So that would be, theoretically, 241 gallon per hour emitters on that line. So that's an awful lot of plants.
And don't you love the fact that the big box stores have come up with a slightly variant size of tubing?
Yes.
So you never know if you're buying the right size elbow coupler.
Just goes together, and then it pops apart later, right?
Oh.
Surprise.
Man, that was a dirty trick the day they invented that.
Yep. They're color-coded, too. Oh, black and blue are the professional, and the green is the what we call half inch.
Okay.
1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE for you. As we go to Luella.
Hi. I have a question with a couple of my ash trees, and they're not all together. It looks like a woodpecker there's like holes, and then the limbs are starting to die by that part of the trunk. I don't know what. Should I get rid of the whole tree? Is it going to spread? I don't know what to do.
You know, that could be a bird. Could be, obviously, that's mechanical damage.
It's on the trunk.
Right.
And then the limbs, the limbs closest to that part are dying off. So will the whole tree die? Or should I just cut it down so it doesn't spread?
It's a little... That's a tough one. You don't want to get rid of the tree if you don't have to. Ash tree is a beautiful tree.
And they're beautiful.
I would. It's a pretty significant investment in your landscape. I would be looking at a little more information. I think I would go and have one of our friends, one of our certified arborists, Rosie in the House Contractors, come take a look at that.
How high off the ground is the damage?
My height, 5'8". I mean, just looking right at it. Because the trunk, that's about where the branches start.
Well, I tell you, what you ought to do is just take a couple pictures of it, email it to us at info@rosieonthehouse.com. We'll get it to our tree arborist. We'll have your email address, and we'll just root it. We'll just loop it back to you. But get us some good pictures. That's something we need to see, whether it's mechanical damage from wind or birds or boring insects of one type or another, and then we can guide you along from there.
Yeah, before we get the chainsaw, can be a reflex pretty quick for a lot of people. But
you don't need to, right? And ash trees they need a lot of water. They do need a lot of really deep waterings. We do see trouble with ashes around town because they don't get watered correctly. So that's one thing to consider.
My wife has a handful of ash trees that I kept wondering where did these come from? Where did these come from? Where did these come from? Because she had got them on a clearance, and you know what? I finally figured it out. I got an invitation to Surprise Stadium for a baseball game. It was built the same year she got the ash trees, and they're the same height, the same. So it was the leftover order from that they were clearing out. And I tell you what, I really like them. I like that green, leaf color. I mean, something about that color of green. Now, they're messy, they're deciduous, or they're not.
They are.
And when they lose all the leaves. But my goats love the leaves. So
there you go.
It all works out.
Happy trees, happy goats.
Let's continue on to Gilbert now with Fred. Welcome to the program.
That leaves an open line for you at 1-888-767-4348. Give us a ring. Don't wait till next week. And we can get you in now without a busy signal. A lot of times you'll call and all you get's busy. We got an open line for you now. Caller in Gilbert.
Mr. Fred.
Yes. I have two trees that are got brown tips into both the ends of the leaves, and they've never done this before.
You know, that making a pretty snap judgment, the tips being burned like that oftentimes is salt burn from shallow waterings. So,
well, I got flood irrigation.
Well, okay, that's not typically shallow watering, so... brown leaf. If I had a nickel for every time I had somebody say, I got a brown leaf, what do I do? That's a tough one.
What kind of tree was it? What kind of tree?
I think it's a Chinese elm. It has white flowers on it, but I didn't get them this year.
White flowers. Could be a flowering pear, perhaps?
Yeah, I honestly do not know, but it used to have a real dark green leaf, too. Now it's real pale green.
Again, that's almost another show and tell thing. If he could just take a couple
photos, would
take
be
a little
there.
Limb, trim a little limb, get into
take
the
it to
local,
your local nursery.
Mm-hmm. Where was he calling from?
Gilbert.
Okay.
Lots. I mean, Harper's is in Mesa. You've got AMP's got a couple locations throughout the East Valley. You can RosieOnTheHouse.com. If you go to nursery and garden products, no matter what region you're in, you can look up the Arizona Nursery Association. And they've got plant-something.org, and we've also got the listings of their independent nurseries that are members of the Nursery Association. Just all great people. Most of them, just like Bill here, has got a lot of family history, generations of gardening. They're multi-generational operations, and you know, you're supporting locals that way. We love it.
And we encourage people to take those kind of plant challenges into the local nurseries. But what you got to do is you got to trim it and get it to the nursery. Don't trim it. Leave it on your dashboard for 3 days and then bring it into the nursery. We'll be back at Rosie on the House.